Let's just make the podcast an hour of Steve just like describing what he's seeing on cover.
I'm just saying.
He's going to poorly describe a television show, and we have to sit here and figure out what he's watching.
Yeah. Bro, that's kind of tacky. You're like, you got like your big ass wedding ring in the fucking picture. Come on.
Keep you up with the Kardashians.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Hey guys, delete that message I just sent you. I wasn't supposed to text that to everyone.
And Ryan.
Oh God, we're just gonna name this show dickheads who should not be on money.
And this week we talk about members of the current government that Andrew Jackson would have murdered.
Which is ironic because they really want to be
Jackson
him.
Andrew Jackson is furiously pounding the inside of his coffin right now, knowing what's going on in DC.
I admit it. I was wrong. It's us. We're the worst.
My favorite thing is when they were talking about getting rid of Andrew Jackson off the 20 and putting Harriet Tubman on there. Listen to me. That was the most glorious probably 2 weeks of the internet, just scrolling through and seeing the impotent rage and the screaming about Andrew Jackson being taken off money. Listen, the usual suspects, exactly who you think it was.
Guys in their cars ranting at their phones wearing Oakleys. Yep.
Let me tell you something. Andrew Jackson is a pillar of this United States. The money is essential to our freedoms. I'm like,
the only reason I'm able to wear Costa Del Mars is because of Andrew Jackson.
Oh my God. Yeah.
My pappy.
That was glorious. For what it's worth, I still want Harriet Tubman on the 20 just to watch heads explode.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yes, today, boys, we're going to be continuing our discussion of Andrew Jackson. We'll be moving into his presidency.
Just as a clarification and complete transparency before we start, I know nothing about Andrew Jackson besides he was a president, and he was a douchebag.
Well, you're about to learn all about him, Ryan.
Let me lend you my Bud K Trail of Tears commemorative switch knife.
Like, I know he either started the Trail of Tears, or had something to do with the Trail of Tears, but he was a piece of shit, as far as I know. And I was just like, wonderful.
No, but that's the real thing, by the way. Have you ever seen the magazine Bud K?
No.
Bro, so the Bud K magazine is just like this crank...
Is it like a weed magazine?
...variety catalog that's just full of, like, weapons and, like, swords and knives and... self-defense bullshit and, you know, fake, and probably filled with Trump paraphernalia now.
Like the old Soldier of Fortune magazine.
It is where Soldier of Fortune subscribers go to shop for, like, gifts. Okay? And I subscribed to it for years until all the fucking Trump shit started, and I don't want that crap in my house.
It's QVC for gun nuts and survivalists.
Yeah, because it was just crazy, like, the amount of dumb shit that was on there. Like, when I was a kid... It's still on, by the way. We used to watch this show called The Knife Show. It used to come on at like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was on until like 7 a.m. And it was just them selling like ludicrous amounts of pocket knives and like fucking Japanese katanas. You get the Daisho, the Wakizashi, the katana, the Tanto. And that's all for 4 payments of $19.95. That's right. Less than $100 for a samurai sword. Dude. And then the next fucking auction would be 1,000 pocket knives for $55.
Jesus Christ.
Okay.
I mean, you can get that from the TSA now for like $20.
Yeah. TSA auctions are amazing.
But I like to imagine that that was not actually like a thing that anybody else saw. It was just like a Videodrome type thing that you saw.
No, it's real because they're on YouTube. They have a show. It's called Cutlery Corner. They're probably live right now, dude. I guarantee it. I'm about to look that shit up real quick. Because they are ridiculous. Like, I'm serious. If you would just want to start, like, a little knife table at your local flea market, you could clean up, bro. Clean up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude. Oh, man. Oh, my God. Their knives are so cheap, bro. Yeah, it's still going on.
QVC, if I remember correctly, had a guy that was selling like samurai swords on it, and he like cut himself live on the air.
That's
like, fucking
dude. Yeah. No,
we tested the sword.
No, that's Cutlery Corner. That's the knife show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the guy
I thought it was QVC
because it was always Odell, who was the old dude, like the fatter dude with the mustache, and then the young guy is the one who cut himself because he's banging around the fucking shitty like Pakistani steel. And
yeah, it was like a fake katana.
Yeah, dude, I'm not even gonna fucking lie, bro. I literally just turned on Cutlery Corner, and the first fucking thing that they're trying to sell me is a Trump emblazoned. It looks like with like the pattern of a bowling ball, you know, like red, white, and blue bowling ball pocket
Jesus
knife.
Christ.
It just says Trump 45-47. I fucking knew it as soon as I put it on here.
Well, you know, there's like a Venn diagram that's almost a circle with knife guys and Trump guys.
Bro, brother, this is a classic pocket knife, okay? I can't remember. It's a Barlow knife. I don't know if you've ever seen one before. And
no.
I have one at the house. There.
Not a knife
it's like
guy.
Your, it's like your granddad's pocket knife. It's got the little knife and the big knife, okay?
Gotcha.
It's $70.
What?
This Trump knife, and it retails for $160. What kind of a fucking numbnuts do you gotta be? It's a Barlow knife, too. You can pick up 30 Barlow knives at your local pawn store tonight. Unbelievable.
I need to look up.
Oh, shit, the next collection came up. It's guys, I don't want to get off topic here, but I just need to let you know about this deal. It's $120 for the God Bless America collection, which is just one knife each for God Bless and America.
Wait, that's it? That's a Barlow knife? And they're selling it for how much?
$120.
$70.
You've lost your fucking mind.
Let's just make the podcast an hour of Steve just, like, describing what he's seeing on Cutlery Corner.
All I'm just saying is
he's going to describe he's going to poorly describe a television show, and we have to sit here and figure out what he's watching.
Yeah. Bro, that's kind of tacky. You're like, you got, like, your big-ass wedding ring in the fucking picture. Come on.
Keeping up with the Kardashians.
Anyway, Andrew Jackson didn't have a pocket knife.
I'm gonna say
poor
Martin.
Big gaudy wedding ring.
Steve is watching Martin.
Martin, so, how y'all down?
Damn, Gina.
Damn, Gina. Why are you always tripping? Fuck, man. Martin Lawrence was...
God.
He was top tier back in the day. Top
that
tier.
That show was so far ahead of
his
time.
I don't think he got enough credit back in the day. He
did not. Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
He stole the show in Bad Boys. Even in the new one, he was funnier than Will Smith.
Well, yeah.
He's very bloated. He's so bloated.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah, he's definitely...
I was about to say, he is oddly fat now.
He's like the later years of Charles Barkley. Like, he's just...
Talking about somebody that needs to get zemped up.
Fuck. Hey, buddy, get zemped, huh? Save some room on Earth for the rest of us.
Hey, buddy, we govying to the pharmacist.
Pokemon go to the polls. No, we govy to
hey,
the pharmacy.
Hey, it's called we govy, not we gravy, bro. Oh, man.
Holy shit.
What do you think Andrew Jackson would think of semaglutide?
He would murder anybody he saw.
Semaglutide.
They would tell him what it is and what it's doing, and he would just pull out a revolver and shoot them in the face.
He would just go John Wick on the room.
He would just get up and just be like, how many of you are Jewish?
just holding a pistol sideways like a front loading pistol sideways like he's John Wick. In 1822, Jackson agreed to run for the in the 1824 presidential election, and he was nominated by the Tennessee legislature in July. At the time, The Federalist Party had collapsed, and there were four major contenders for the Democratic-Republican Party nomination. They were William Crawford, John Quincy Adams, Henry Clay, and John C. Calhoun. Jackson, though, he was initially intended to be a candidate to take away votes from Crawford, who was seen as being a Washington insider.
So he's going to be a spoiler?
But, yeah, he was supposed to be a spoiler.
He's a Jill Stein, or whatever the fuck her name was.
Also had dinner with Vladimir Putin. Jackson unexpectedly would be very popular outside of Tennessee and became a serious candidate.
He just dropped that and then kept going on. Like, yeah, Jill Stein, not require further inspection.
Dude, Jill Stein is a well-known Russian op. There's like,
there's
she
like
doesn't even fucking hide it.
There was some RT-related like dinner event, and at the people who were at the table with like Putin at the event, Jill Stein was one of them.
Yeah, her and Tulsi Gabbard like have like long distance phone calls with traditional phones where they're like ringing their finger around the telephone cord, going, "How much did you give Putin this year?" You know.
So, girl, dumb question: is she like not allowed to sit next to him for fear of being called a? Because
who?
All right,
who?
Here's what it is.
Well, Ryan, it's not an event where you just like. It's like, I'm going to sit here, and then Putin sits down next to you. It's an event where if you're sitting next to Putin, it's because you're considered, like, an important person to Russia.
Ah, there we go. Because I was going to say, listen, if I'm at a dinner, and Donald Trump is there, I hate that man. But I'm going to do everything in my power to sit at his table, because it is going to be the funniest fucking thing. Or I'm going to learn a bunch of national secrets. Either way, it's going
to
be great.
Yeah, you just play up to him, be like... You tell him. You always tell him that you're a little smarter than him, because he'll give you.
I would
tell you everything about the aliens. You know, the aliens are here, Ryan. They're just.
Yeah. Hey, listen. Had my kid come out in a Yankee shirt, I would have smacked him too. You 100% right.
He asked you how you got in there. You'd be like, I bought like $50 billion in Trump coin, and I'm still holding on to it. I think it's going to be an upward swing any day now.
He just gives you that stupid smirk and a thumbs up.
It can't keep getting worse.
No, you win him over because you tell him that you dropped Melania coin very fast, but you're holding on to Trump coin.
Yeah. And then you look at him and go, because there's no way women are worth anything anyway, right?
Right. <I'm> Jeez. Hold on, my Tesla's calling my phone.
Beep, bop, boop, boop.
But Jackson would prove to be very popular. And would win many votes because the suffrage had been expanded among white males after the War of 1812. And this had increased the amount of, like, sort of everyday average man voters who saw Jackson as being a war hero, who they believed was the proper person to reform Washington.
Okay.
He was also promoted as an outsider.
What was the problem with Washington at the time?
Just the standard stuff, you know, it's corrupt, you know, that there's fat cats 1830? In Washington. This is 1822.
Okay. I was close. So, like, that's nothing new, kind of like the nobody's willing to work anymore, like, joke, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. That's unbelievable that it's just the same shit.
There's actually newspapers dating back to the 1800s that had that same tagline of nobody wants to work anymore.
Oh, yeah, I know. No, every time someone says it, I have an image saved as my reaction folder. And I just say taps the sign and I post it. Back to like the early 1800s.
Yeah. He was also promoted as an outsider who stood for all the people, blaming banks for the country's depression that they had recently gone into.
Jesus Christ, he's like Trump.
During his presidential candidacy, he reluctantly ran for one of Tennessee's U.S. Senate seats. His political managers, William Berkeley Lewis and John Eaton, convinced him that he needed to defeat incumbent John Williams, who opposed him.
I swear to God, everybody's named John in the 1800s. Everybody's named John.
The legislature elected Jackson in October of 1823, and he was attentive to his senatorial duties. He was appointed chairman of the Committee on Military Affairs, but avoided debate or initiating legislation. He used his time in the Senate to form alliances and make peace with old adversaries. Eaton continued to campaign for Jackson's presidency, updating his biography and writing a series of widely circulated pseudonymous letters that portrayed Jackson as a champion of Republican liberty.
Ew.
Democratic Republican presidential nominees had historically been chosen by informal congressional nominating caucuses. At this time, political parties in the United States don't have primaries. They're essentially just chosen, and senators are directly chosen by their political parties as well.
So it's popularity club.
Essentially among the political party.
Gotcha.
In 1824, most of the Democratic Republicans in Congress boycotted the caucus, and the power to choose nominees was shifting to state nominating committees and legislatures. Jackson was nominated by a Pennsylvania convention, making him not merely a regional candidate, but the leading national contender. When Jackson won the Pennsylvania nomination, Calhoun dropped out of the presidential race.
I knew afterwards, it was fucking Pensy, the fucking PA. Of course they would get him in there.
Afterwards,
city of brotherly love. It's great.
They gave him the brotherly shove into the office.
He looks like he could throw a battery.
You know, nothing's going right for the Phillies ever since they got rid of Lenny Dykstra.
I saw that guy climbing a light pole last week. He's good. Elect him.
The other day I was down South Street and I saw John Kruk making out with my mom and I didn't even stop him.
I yelled out his name. He turned around and punched a police horse.
I said, "Hey, John. Hero. Hey, John. You were great in on when you played on the Philadelphia Phillies there back in the 90s." Now, excuse me. I gotta go down to Acme real quick and pick up a pack of Merits.
You just say Merit? Good God, that just unlocked the fucking
I'll have one Merit soft pack. I gotta go over to Cotman. And it's gonna take me a while, so.
The lady that my mom used to drop me off at her house when my mom would go to work when I was a little kid, she smoked Merits.
Yeah, dude, my neighbor smoked Merits back in the day. That fucking soft pack, you shoving that little, like, cigarette clutch. Thank you, Steve.
Goddamn.
Steve jogged my memory on the word clutch. I couldn't think of the name of it. But, yeah, it had that, like, little clasp at the top. Remember? They were, like, faux leather.
You know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. That takes me back.
Afterwards, Jackson won the nomination in six other states and had a strong second-place finish in three others.
Wow.
In the presidential election?
How many states were there in 1824 or whatever?
20, guess. That's a guess.
Let's check real quick.
Yeah, I'm not really 100% sure. You know, like, that's not something I... You know who would know, though? My ex would know. She was obsessed with that shit. You know who
knows? ChatGPT.
What? Huh? Don't you guys... ChatGPT would know. Dare. I used it earlier today to basically take data I had written out over the course of an hour and a half and just create a table and reformat it for me. Cause like,
and it worked
to
great,
me,
and you were like, fuck.
It worked perfect, because to me, that's its whole use. Like, it's basically just smart, like, editor. Like, it's completely plateaued, by the way. All the biggest AI researchers are 100% sure they've hit a hard wall, and it's never going to get fixed. They're going to try to fake it. Watch.
The problem is you can't... AI is not going to ever be as good as a human, and then... But people's expectations are...
Well, that's not their goal.
AI is going to be like a human. Like,
yeah, it's
like
not
a
their goal.
Robot in the Jetsons.
Their goal isn't to be better than a human brain. They understand that...
But the average citizen hears AI, and they expect it to be like a human, like talking to a human. It's talking to a glorified fucking word processor.
We're as far from actual like intelligence as we are from... I don't know. The next evolution of human consciousness. I have no idea.
Like, when you talk to ChatGPT, you're talking to Clippy the Paperclip from Word 97.
No,
like, that's who
it's
you're
way smarter than that,
to.
But...
Know. There were 24 like states in 1824, by the way.
24 states? Oh, it was close.
24.
That's not bad. That 24?
Yeah.
So in the presidential election, Jackson won a 42% plurality of the popular vote. He also won a plurality of electoral votes, receiving a plurality. And he won a plurality of electoral votes, receiving 99 votes from states in the Southwest and Mid-Atlantic. He was the only candidate to win states outside of his regional base. Adams dominated New England. Crawford won Virginia and Georgia, and Clay won three Western states. Because no candidate had a majority of 131 electoral votes, the House of Representatives held a contingent election under terms of the 12th Amendment. The amendment specifies that only the top three electoral vote winners are eligible to be elected by the House, so Quay was eliminated from contention.
So it was a runoff with the top three? Is that what that is?
And then Quay, who was also Speaker of the House and presided over the election's resolution, saw a Jackson presidency as a disaster for the country. Quay threw his support behind Adams, who won the contingent election on the first ballot, and Adams appointed Quay as his Secretary of State, leading supporters of Jackson to accuse Quay and Adams of having struck a corrupt bargain.
Sounds like they made a deal with the devil.
After a congressional session concluded, Jackson resigned the Senate seat and returned to Tennessee. After the election, Jackson's supporters formed a new party to undermine Adams and ensure he served only one term. Adams' presidency went poorly, and Adams' behavior undermined it. He was perceived as an intellectual elite who ignored the needs of the populace. He was unable to accomplish anything because Congress blocked his proposals. In his first annual message to Congress, Adams stated that, quote-unquote, we are palsied by the will of our constituents, which was interpreted as his being against representative democracy. Jackson responded by championing the needs of ordinary citizens and declaring that, quote-unquote, the voice of the people must be heard.
God, this dude sounds like such a chud.
Jackson was nominated for the president by the Tennessee legislature in October of 1825, more than 3 years before the 1828 election. He gained powerful supporters in both the South and North, including Calhoun, who became Jackson's vice presidential running mate. John C. Calhoun and New York Senator Martin Van Buren.
Calhoun.
Meanwhile, Adams' support for the Southern states was eroded when he signed a tax on European imports, the Tariff of 1828, which was called the Tariff of Abominations by opponents into law.
The Tariff of Abominations?
Yeah. Jackson's victory in the presidential race was overwhelming. He won 56% of the popular vote and 68% of electoral votes. The election,
I feel like the Tariff of Abominations is actually what it should be today, trying to talk about 25% on Canada and Mexico. That's a fucking abomination. Get the fuck out of here.
It makes no sense. It makes absolutely no economic sense at all. At all.
None. Especially when Ford is located and in fucking Mexico.
He's literally holding it there now just because they're not letting their side down. I mean, you can't convince me otherwise. Because there's no purpose to it to begin with.
Bitch. That's it, yeah.
And then they were like, well, we're going to drop it. And Canada's like, well, we're not fucking dropping ours until you completely drop it. Like,
yeah, Canada's
so
like, go fuck yourself.
Fucked.
We live next door to you. Fuck off.
They could screw us over. So
could Mexico.
In northern states. Oh, my God, dude.
Mexico could fuck this entire country so bad it's not even funny.
There's like almost the entire Northeast gets their fucking fuel from Canada.
Yeah.
They would have no fuel.
And 90% of our fucking vegetation in your supermarket comes from somebody who's from Mexico getting those fruits picked and to you.
Unbelievable.
The election ended the one-party system that had formed during the era of good feelings as Jackson supporters coalesced into the Democratic Party.
This is Marcus Aurelius. He had to draw on the Pax Americana.
also known as during the era of good feelings.
Yeah.
And the various groups who did not support him eventually formed the Whig Party.
Fuck, I knew it. He's terrible.
The political campaign was dominated by the personal abuse that partisans flung at both candidates. Jackson was accused of being the son of an English prostitute and a mulatto.
Damn.
And he was accurately labeled a slave trader who trafficked in human flesh.
You're half black and your mom's a whore. I feel like insults,
you sell slaves.
I feel like insults haven't changed at all.
A series of pamphlets known as the Coffin Handbills accused him of having murdered 18 white men, including the soldiers he had executed for desertion, and alleging that he stabbed a man in the back with his cane. In 1807, Jackson had been indicted and acquitted on a charge of assault with intent to kill in the case of the alleged cane stabbing.
Assault with intent to kill with a fucking cane? Good lord.
They stated that he had intentionally massacred Native American women and children at the Battle of Horseshoe Bend, ate the bodies of Native Americans he killed in battle, and threatened to cut off the ears of congressmen who questioned his behavior during the First Seminole War.
All that tracks.
Yeah, but is any of that true?
I mean, probably. Half of it.
I would say probably 90% of
like,
he
true. Definitely murdered.
Maybe exaggerated, but
I don't think he ate people.
I mean,
I guarantee you he threatened to cut off people's ears.
Jackson and his wife Rachel were accused of adultery for living together before her divorce was finalized, and Rachel heard about the accusation. She had been under stress throughout the election, and just as Jackson was preparing to head to Washington for his inauguration, she fell ill. She did not live to see her husband become president, dying of a stroke or heart attack a few days later.
Oh, that's terrible. Jackson, so she left her husband for Andrew Jackson?
Yeah, like where we talked about
her husband.
That her and her husband were essentially, like, separated, and that she had hooked up with Andrew Jackson. Because remember, it's really hard to get a divorce during this time period.
It's almost impossible. Yeah. The man has to agree.
Yeah. And he essentially got it because he claimed she was being, like, unfaithful to him.
Well, good. I'm glad she died before she saw this dude become president. She doesn't deserve to see him become president. She's gross, and he's gross, but fuck it.
Jackson believed that the abuse from Adams' supporters had hastened her death, stating at her funeral, "May God Almighty forgive her murderers, as I know she forgave them. I never can."
Oh, my God.
This guy, get off the fucking cross. We need the wood. Get the fuck. Come on,
wow,
bro.
Wow, I like that. That's good. What? I'm going to drop that one on somebody. Would you get off your fucking cross? I need the wood.
You never heard that before?
No, it's great.
Oh, it's excellent. It's when you know, you eat somebody just being like all too fucking hoity-toity, high and mighty. Like, all right, get the fuck across.
Yeah.
Come on, get the fuck down, bro.
Jackson arrived in Washington, D.C. on February 11th and began forming his cabinet. He chose Van Buren as Secretary of State, John Eaton as Secretary of War.
I didn't know he was a woodworker.
Mm-hmm. He's like Jesus Christ.
He said he's forming his cabinet.
Samuel D. Ingham as Secretary of Treasury, John Branch as Secretary of the Navy, John M. Berrien as Attorney General, and William T. Berry as Postmaster General.
And these people were not voted for before Congress, right? They were just immediately appointed.
Yeah, it was just like, yo, this is my boy. He's going to be Postmaster General.
This is my boy.
My boy, Billy Berry.
Louis DeJoy. This is my boy.
Billy Berry.
Just has an arm over the shoulder of him, and then his other hand is holding a pistol.
Trust me, he's good. He's good. I vouch for him.
Jackson was inaugurated on March 4th, 1829. Adams, who was embittered by his defeat, refused to attend. Jackson was the first president-elect to take the oath of office on the East Portico of the U.S. Capitol.
Is that where they do it now?
Yeah. In his inaugural address, he promised to protect the sovereignty of the states, respect the limits of the presidency, reform the government by removing disloyal or incompetent appointees, and observe a fair policy toward Native Americans.
Oh, he lied.
Jackson invited the public to the White House, which was promptly overrun by well-wishers who caused minor damage to his furnishings. This spectacle gave him the nickname of King Mob.
That is a brilliant fucking idea, and nobody tell Trump, because he will do that. He will say, "I want all my supporters to come to the White House."
Well, he wants to pave over the Rose Garden so he can have his handsome hamburger parties out there, like in Mar-a-Lago.
He wants to pave over the White House Rose Garden?
Yep.
Yeah, the grass. I think he wants to leave the roses, but just pave the grass, because he says that it's too difficult for women in high heels to walk in the grass.
It's a fucking... No. Where's my beta blocker? I need to...
Someone hand me my beta blockers.
I need a nitro pill or something. This is going to kill me.
Jackson
was before Trump at this
Jackson
rate.
Was also gifted a giant block of cheese, which was so big that they couldn't finish it, and eventually they just offered people to come and pick to take from it, like in Washington D.C. because it was just this giant block of like rotting cheese that they had in the White House left over from the inauguration.
Dude, that's fucking sick.
Jackson believed that Adams' administration had been corrupt, and he initiated investigations to all executive departments. These investigations revealed that $280,000, the equivalent of $8,300,000 in today's money, was stolen from the Treasury. They also resulted...
What?
Yeah, that the equivalent of $8 million had been stolen from the Treasury. They also resulted in a reduction in costs of the Department of the Navy, saving $1 million at that time, the equivalent to $29,500,000 in today's money.
They saved $1 million in the 1800s. Yeah, it's like 30 Brazilian dollars today.
30 Brazilian, dude, come on. That's a lot.
Jackson asked Congress to tighten laws on embezzlement and tax evasion, and he pushed for an improved government accounting system. Jackson implemented a principle he called rotation in office. The previous custom had been for the president to leave the existing appointees in office, replacing them through attrition. Jackson enforced the Tenure of Office Act, an 1820 law that limited office tenure and authorized the president to remove current office holders and appoint new ones. During his first year in office, he removed about 10% of all federal employees and replaced them with loyal Democrats. Jackson argued that rotation in office reduced corruption by making office holders responsible to the popular will, but it functioned as political patronage, became known as the spoil system. Which, if you're familiar with Tammany Hall, that's pretty much the spoil system.
Yep, I remember fucking goddamn senior year high school history.
Jackson spent much of his time during his first 2.5 years in office dealing with what came to be known as the Petticoat Affair or Eaton Affair.
Ooh.
The affair focused on Secretary of War Eaton's wife, Margaret. She had a reputation for being promiscuous, and like Rachel Jackson, she was accused of adultery. She and Eaton had been close before her first husband, John Timberlake, died, and they married 9 months after his death.
John Timberlake. Any relation?
Maybe. He created the first
Tims. That seems like a very unique name to not be related somehow in your family tree.
Just one of those, like... One of those 19th century photographs. Well, Steve's going with JT. I'm going with the shoes.
You mean Timberlands?
Or Timberlands, yeah.
Yeah, Timberlake is only Justin.
Justin. Also, I just want to point out, another fucking John. Everybody's name.
Everybody's
fucking,
got unoriginal John. Cock. Well, I think
these
what
unoriginal
it was,
bastards
Steve,
in the 1800s, you got nothing but Johns and Williams and Andrews. That's it.
Here's my theory, right? Every house that had a John could sell it as having a John, like an in-house John.
Oh, my God.
Even if they didn't, even if it was still an outhouse. But you hear the house, they got a John in there, you know?
Yeah, we got an indoor John, as a matter of fact.
Technically, it's not a lie. So you can sell it that way, you know?
Except for Barry's wife, Catherine, the cabinet members' wives followed the lead of Vice President Calhoun's wife, Flaherty, and refused to socialize with the Eatons.
What the fuck is their name? What was that, like an adverb for shitty? Flaherty? What the fuck?
Yeah. It's like Florida, but with an E at the end. Instead of an A.
I got nothing. What the fuck?
Flaherty.
Oh, you mean Flo Ridey.
Though Jackson defended Margaret, her presence with the cabinet, which had been so ineffective that he rarely called it into session, and the ongoing disagreement led to its dissolution. In early 1831, Jackson demanded the resignation of all cabinet members except Barry, who would resign in 1835 when a congressional investigation revealed his mismanagement of the post office. Jackson tried to compensate Van Buren by appointing him the minister to Great Britain, but Calhoun blocked the nomination with a tie-breaking vote against it. Van Buren, along with the newspaper editors Amos Kendall and Francis Preston Blair, would become regular participants in Jackson's kitchen cabinet, an unofficial, varying group of advisors that Jackson turned to for decision-making even after he had formed a new official cabinet.
Did you call it the kitchen cabinet?
Yeah.
What? Why? Why is it called the kitchen cabinet?
Because they'd meet in the kitchen.
I'm disgusted but unsurprised at the lack of originality.
Jackson's presidency marked the beginning of a national policy of Native American removal. Before Jackson took office, the relationship between the southern states and the Native American tribes who lived within their boundaries was strained. The states felt that they had full jurisdiction over their territories, and the native tribes saw themselves as autonomous nations that had a right to the land they lived on. Significant portions of the five major tribes in the area, then known as the Southwest, the Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Creek, and Seminoles, began to adopt white culture, including education, agricultural techniques, a road system, and rudimentary manufacturing.
Don't do it, because next comes capitalism. Don't do it, it's a trap.
I mean, the Cherokee, like, for instance, were all in on, like, slavery. So were the Choctaw and the Chickasaw.
That's pretty fucked.
In the case of tensions between the state of Georgia and the Cherokee, Adams had tried to address the issue by encouraging Cherokee emigration west of the Mississippi through financial incentives, but most refused.
Jackson's about to make y'all go.
In the first days of Jackson's presidency, some southern states passed legislation extending state jurisdiction to Native American lands. Which is not allowed under the Constitution. The federal government is what can only make agreements and treaties with Native American tribes.
Correct.
Jackson supported the state's rights to do so, and his position was later made clear in the 1832 Supreme Court test case of this legislation, Worcester versus Georgia. Worcester.
It's Worcester.
Georgia had arrested a group of missionaries for entering Cherokee territory without a permit. The Cherokee declared these arrests illegal because they control the rights of their own territory, not the state of Georgia, which was issuing passes that made it legal for people to enter.
Right, which, that territory, I think, was controlled by Jim Crockett, right, in Crockett Productions.
You're right, Steve.
Cousin to Davey.
Oh shit! Probably.
You know when he and that's also when he went out into the audience and just started calling a group of black kids the N word. The court under Chief Justice John Marshall decided in favor of the Cherokee. The imposition of Georgia law on the Cherokee was unconstitutional. Horace Greeley alleges that when Jackson heard the ruling, he said, "Well, John Marshall has made his decision. Now let him enforce it."
Ooh, listen to this catty bitch. Okay.
Although the quote may be apocryphal, Jackson made it clear he could not use he would not use the federal government to enforce the ruling. Jackson used the power of the federal government to enforce the separation of indigenous tribes and whites. In May of 1830. Jackson signed the Indian Removal Act, which Congress narrowly passed. It gave the president the right to negotiate treaties to buy tribal lands in the eastern part of the United States in exchange for lands set aside for Native Americans west of the Mississippi, as well as a broad discretion on how to use the federal funds allocated to the negotiations. The law was supposed to be a voluntary relocation program, but it was not implemented as one. Jackson's administration often achieved agreement to relocate through bribes, fraud, and intimidation, and the leaders who signed the treaties often did not represent the entire tribe. For instance, when the signing of the Treaty of New Akota, which was the treaty that removed the Cherokee, only 100 Cherokee signed it, and they were not from the governing council of the Cherokee, the National Council, which was the only body within the Cherokee Nation that was allowed by the Cherokee Nation to sign treaties.
Right.
And it did not include the signature of the principal chief of the Cherokee people, Chief John Ross, who was essentially the president of the Cherokee.
It's like the mayor of Orlando signing a treaty with the federal government representing the state of Florida. It's like, ah, people are going to take issue with that.
I'm Buddy Dyer.
I'm Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer. And if you're coming to the City Beautiful to find out whether or not there's government corruption, you're in a great place.
Whether you're finding corruption or taking part in corruption,
yeah.
Orlando is the place to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on vacation, leave on probation, come back on a violation. Welcome to Orlando.
And the relocations as well were often mismanaged and rife with corruption, theft, that would cause great suffering, obviously, to the indigenous peoples that were forced to undertake them.
Suffering.
In 1830, Jackson personally negotiated with the Chickasaw.
I don't think the Sylvester Cat impression was appropriate there, actually. My bad.
In 1830, Jackson personally negotiated with the Chickasaw, who quickly agreed to move. In the same year, Choctaw leaders signed the Treaty of Dancing Rabbit Creek. The majority did not want the treaty, but complied with its terms. In 1832, Seminole leaders signed the Treaty of Payne's Landing, which stipulated that the Seminoles would move west and become part of the Muscogee Creek Confederacy if they found the new land suitable. Most Seminoles refused to move, leading to the Second Seminole War in 1835, which lasted for 6 years. It should be noted as well that the Creek and the Seminoles are traditional enemies. So it'd be like, yeah, we want to remove, like, because the Seminoles had, like, fled south to get away from the Creek, pretty much.
Right.
And white settlers. So it's kind of like, yeah, we're going to put these two groups that hate each other together. Like, we're going to relocate Serbs and Kosovars to, like, the same area. Bosniaks.
Hey, Israel, you're now going to home all these Palestinians that you that you fucked up in Gaza. We're going to actually put them in the heart of Israel. Are you cool with that?
Sure.
Members,
you know, the Palestinians would be sitting there. They'd be sitting there, yeah, bomb me now, motherfucker.
Members of the Muscogee Creek Confederacy ceded their land to the state of Alabama in the Treaty of Cusseta in 1832. Their private ownership of the land was to be protected, but the federal government did not enforce this. The government did encourage voluntary removal until the Creek War of 1836, after which almost all Creek were removed to Oklahoma Territory. In 1836, Creek leaders ceded their land to the government by the Treaty of... Or Cherokee leaders ceded their land to the government by the Treaty of New Okota, which, like I said, was an illegal treaty that the actual, like, real leaders didn't agree to. Their removal, known as the Trail of Tears, was enforced by Jackson's successor, Martin Van Buren. Jackson also applied the removal policy to the Northwest, which is what today we consider to be the Midwest.
Right.
He was not successful in removing the Iroquois Confederacy in New York, but when some members of the Meskwaki or Fox and the Sauk triggered the Black Hawk War by trying to cross back to the east side of the Mississippi, the peace treaties ratified after their defeat reduced their lands further. During his administration, he made about 70 treaties with Native American tribes. He had removed almost all the Native Americans east of the Mississippi and south of Lake Michigan, about 70,000 people from the United States. Though it was done at the cost of thousands of Native American lives, lost because of the unsanitary conditions and epidemics arising from their dislocation as well as their resistance to expulsion. Jackson's implementation of the Indian Removal Act contributed to his popularity with his constituency. He added over 170,000 square miles of land to the public domain, which primarily benefited the United States agricultural interests. The act also benefited small farmers, as Jackson allowed them to purchase moderate plots of land at low prices and offered squatters of land formerly belonging to Native Americans the option to purchase it before it was offered for sale to others.
What the fuck?
God, he seems like such a piece of shit. He's a small business owner. Like, that's what he is. He's like a small business owner that was given the fucking reins to the country and just told to fucking just go ham.
Jackson had to confront another challenge that had been building up since the beginning of his first term. The Tariff of 1828, which had been passed the last year of Adams' administration, set a protective tariff at a very high rate to prevent the manufacturing industries in the northern states from having to compete with lower-priced imports from Britain. The tariff reduced the income of southern cotton planters, It propped up consumer prices, but not the price of cotton, which had severely declined in the previous decade. Immediately after the tariff's passage, the South Carolina Exposition and protests was sent to the U.S. Senate. The document, which had been anonymously written by John C. Calhoun, asserted that the Constitution was a compact of individual states, and when the federal government went beyond its delegated duties, such as enacting a protective tariff, a state had a right to declare this action unconstitutional and make the act null and void within the borders of that state. Jackson suspected...
I don't disagree with that. I don't totally disagree with that. I kind of the second part of it, I'm like, eh. But, like, yes, the Constitution is pretty much just a confederation an amalgamation of 13 states that decided that, hey, like, we're going to just kind of start this government to, like, watch over all of us, but, our own decisions.
We'll get to how this crisis ends, and then also the Civil War ultimately answers that question finally, and that federal law trumps, state law.
Right.
But Jackson suspected Calhoun of writing the exposition in protest and opposed his interpretation. Jackson argued that Congress had full authority to enact tariffs and that a dissenting state was denying the will of the majority. He also needed the tariff, which generated 90% of the federal revenue, to achieve another of his presidential goals, eliminating the national debt. The issue developed into a personal rivalry between the two men. An example of this was the celebration of Thomas Jefferson's birthday on April 13th, 1830. The attendees gave their after-dinner toasts. Jackson toasted, "Our federal union, it must be preserved," which was a clear challenge to nullification, and Calhoun, whose toast immediately followed, rebutted, "The union, next to our liberty, the most dear."
Okay, getting feisty, I see it.
As a compromise, Jackson supported the tariff of 1832, which reduced the duties from the tariff of 1828 by almost half. The bill was signed on July 9th, but failed to satisfy extremists on either side. On November 24th, South Carolina passed the Ordinance of Nullification, declaring both tariffs null and void and threatening to secede from the United States if the federal government tried to use force to collect the duties. In response, Jackson sent warships to Charleston Harbor and threatened to hang any man who worked to support the nullification or secession.
God damn. Okay. So Andrew Jackson is about his business, though. He may be a piece of shit, but he stands on business.
On December 10th, he issued a proclamation against, quote-unquote, the nullifiers, condemning nullification as contrary to the Constitution's letter and spirit, rejecting the right of secession, and declaring that South Carolina stood on, quote-unquote, the brink of insurrection and treason. On December 28th, Calhoun, who had been elected to the U.S. Senate, resigned as vice president.
Why?
Because he wrote that letter about nullification, and then this whole thing's going on. His vice president essentially indirectly challenging him through these anonymous letters and supporting this thing that he opposes.
Ah, man.
Jackson asked Congress to pass a force bill authorizing the military to enforce the tariff. It was attacked by Calhoun as despotism.
Here we go. Trump meanwhile, version one.
Calhoun and Clay began to work on a new compromise tariff. Jackson saw it as an effective way to end the confrontation, but insisted on the passage of the force bill before he signed. On March 2nd, he signed into law the force bill and the tariff of 1833. The South Carolina Convention then met and rescinded its nullification ordinance, but nullified the force bill in a final act of defiance. 2 months later, Jackson reflected on South Carolina's nullification. The tariff was only the pretext, and disunion in Southern Confederacy the real object. The next pretext will be the Negro or slave question.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Thank God he's, like, way too in the past to, like, talk about, like, the Jew question. But his shit is just already just...
He's a big stinker.
Yep.
Real stinker.
All right. Since... This will be a short episode. We'll finish up next episode.
Oh boy.
since we started late and we have a shorter time, but I think that's a good place to stop, and we'll pick up and finish up with one Andrew Jackson.
I always thought that he was the one who started and implemented the Trail of Tears. I didn't know that he just kicked it off, and that, what was it, Martin Van Buren was the one that
Yeah, really Martin did it. Van Buren was the one who did it, who got it going, and William Scott Key, the general, was the one who, like, carried it out.
Related to Francis Scott Key, the Star Spangled Banner guy? Again, not what? That many people are going to be named Scott Key, right?
It was William Scott Key.
Anyway.
Right? Related to Francis, right?
Gotta be. Could be. Maybe.
Probably.
Doesn't have to be.
Hanging off his Could fucking be. Family tree somewhere down there at the bottom.
Hi, I'm John Scott Key, and this is Dateline NBC.
Hey, I'm John Scott Key, and I'd like you to have a seat right... Just have a seat right there for me.
We're pretty much done, Steve.
My chair slid away from me and almost fell on the floor. All right, good night.
Later. Bye.